I'm recording.
Okay. Everyone,
this is good? Zach Forsman. This is Zach's file.
This is the Toby file.
You're ruining my show already.
I thought that would be helpful. Should we slate? Should we go?
Not if we cannot do it at the same time, which is probably impossible.
Oh. Yeah.
This is Toby's clap.
Worthless.
Oh, my God. All right. Everyone shut up. Welcome to the show. This is Bat and Spider. Yeah, you thought we had the month off because Dale is in the old country on assignment. But surprise, I'm still here, sitting at home, watching movies. And I decided to ask not just friends, some might say brothers, to join me to watch a movie from more their youth, a movie called Superfuzz. And yeah, we'll get into that. But I wanted to introduce my special co-host this week. First, we have Toby Forsman, who is famous in Bat and Spiderland for composing our theme song. Toby, you want to say hi?
Hello. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to sit in for Dale. Hopefully, maybe be considered as his replacement someday. Just kidding. There is no replacing Dale. I love Dale, and I hope he's having a great trip. Overseas.
He is. He's making a lot of posts still in the Discord, as everyone sees. He's having a blast. And Zach Forsman, another brother of mine, who is responsible probably the most in my life for getting me into movies and probably showing me some of the weirdest things as a child I shouldn't have seen. And forever starting a lifelong love affair with them movies. Hello, Zach. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I know I've done this in the past, but I should apologize for showing you Soul Vengeance at a tender young age.
I can't remember if I've talked about that on the show. I'm sure I have, because it's an indelible memory in my mind.
Yeah, I think that was a step too far, though. That was must have been traumatizing, really.
You know, I grew up fast in many ways. It's fine. We don't have to dilly dally. Let's just get into Superfuzz. Dave Speed, he's a rookie city police officer who gets caught in a red platonic explosion, gaining superpowers. He can anticipate crime, see through walls, move objects with his mind. He can catch bullets in his teeth. As he's doing all this crime fighting with his buddy Sarge, his magic powers, they seem to come and go. So he goes on this search trying to figure out just why. And while he does it, he's putting away gangsters like Tony Torpedo and helping Sarge get a dance with his favorite movie actress. And lots of gags. This is a goofy, goofy movie. Superfuzz 1980. Now, I have a question for you guys, because this is a brother's pick. This is, from what I can tell, this is like, I told you guys, oh, we should watch something from our childhood to reminisce on. Now, I don't think I have any memories of this movie, but for you guys, this was a regular, right? This might have been before my time, I'm guessing.
Well, I've been dying to ask Zach, and I want to preface this by informing the audience, maybe they should know, that I'm the middle child and Zach is the oldest.
Yeah, that's the dynamic.
And so, like you, Charles, a lot of what I was watching as a kid was whatever Zach was watching, you know? And I'm pretty sure Superfuzz is one of those movies that, like, Zach was watching it, and so was I. So I have a guess that maybe it was on HBO via cable to Scrambler.
Mm. I was just thinking about that word, to Scrambler, the other day. Great word. It's gone from the lexicon. I love it, though. To Scrambler. Sorry, go ahead.
Nobody just scrambles, they unzip.
Zach, how about you?
Yeah, as far as I can remember, it was either HBO or Prism, which was a premium channel out of Philadelphia.
It was like a local cable, because that's like when cable started, right? There were like more localized cable stations.
Yeah. And the way I remember that we could get these channels was we had an old TV that had channels 2 through 13. And then there were two channels that were just asterisks.
Oh, weird.
And if you hit channel 2 and one of the asterisks at the same time, you got HBO. If you did channel 2 and the other asterisk, you got Prism.
Whoa.
And they would just come through.
Wow.
I think they eventually worked something out, because then I remember Dad getting a black box from his bookie.
Yes, I remember the black box. It was fantastic. When's the last time you saw this? Was it way back then?
Yeah, for me, it would have had to have been. In fact, I remember thinking as I was watching it, like, this was a great movie for me to see at a young age. You know, the silliness of it.
Yeah.
You know, is probably what really, what I latched on to. And then, you know, as I got older, I probably went 2-3 decades where, you know, I wouldn't have wanted to watch it. But now,
yeah,
the age I am now, I'm the same age as all the characters in the movie, more or less. And you know, like, I think the thing that I came away with was how good-natured the movie was.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just a lot of positive vibes. And, you know, now I'm at the age where, like, okay, I really kind of respect what they were going for here.
Yeah, because this is Carbucci. Now, he's someone that, like, I've only seen, like, I think a couple of his Westerns, which are very, you know, they're spaghetti Westerns. They're gritty and serious and stuff for the most part. So I've never seen any of his, like, comedy stuff. This is, like, a wild thing for probably a lot of people to see this type of movie coming out of him. I loved it. It was, like, it's basically a gag-based movie, like, from the outside. It's, like, I know I cite Mad Magazine all the time, but it's, like, the whole movie is just basically every scene set up around some visual gag or joke that's happening. But it works, even though it's like an hour and 45 minutes, which is kind of long for what it's about. It's like, it's fun, because every scene has something stupid in it.
Yeah, for sure. And those gags, I had a realization while watching it that this movie, you know how we grew up making movies with our parents' camcorders and,
oh yeah,
you know, making little shorts and that thing. This movie made, like, all those sort of in-camera effects, those gags, look doable.
Yeah.
Because you could kind of see how they were getting away with stuff. And, you know, that just inspired our own imaginations for the things that we were doing.
Yeah, totally. They do a lot of, like I'm just thinking of Ernest Borgnine, and it kind of doesn't work, but it's how they, like, when he's on the big balloon in the sky and he's yelling, "Hey baby, hey Dave, come catch me, I'm coming down, baby," but it's such an awkward shot, because it looks like the balloon, you can tell, is just sitting on the ground and he's standing on top of it, but then they cut to hit, like, him jumping off, like a dummy coming off of the balloon. You're like, oh he was still up there. but yeah exactly. It's like it's a good instruction booklet on how to frame and how to do those kind of shots. Toby, do you remember, is this the first time you've seen it since then?
It's been a while. There are certain scenes and shots that are very well burned into my head that I remembered and I didn't need to be. And then other elements of the story and scenes that I didn't remember at all. Like the image of Dave Speed eating flower petals. I guess to my tender mind was like, why the frick is he eating flower? It actually, in that scene, and I guess we'll get to that, but there was, and Ernest Borgnine's face. We could probably talk about Ernest Borgnine's face for an hour.
The flower petals, that's the thing about this movie. I watched it about 1.5 times, and you just said he's chewing on flower petals. I have no memory of this. I just watched this movie.
I understand flower petals are edible. And I think it's when he's got those three goons that report to Tony Torpedo, and he's like, all right, get out of the car. We're going to do a roadside test. And he makes them do all those silly things. He's holding the flower bouquet, which I forget what that bouquet was for. There's another bouquet in the movie that's red flowers, but he's holding white flowers in this scene. And while he's telling them what to do in this roadside test, he's eating flower petals.
I don't remember that.
He's picking them off and eating them.
Jeez.
I guess they're edible, but it's just weird to see someone eat flower petals. Does Bill Murray eat flower petals in Stripes, Zach?
not that I remember.
Oh, Toby, this is we got to broach this subject, because a huge part of this movie is this song that kind of plays constantly. They get so much mileage out of this track, and it's a great, thank God it's like good and catchy, and like you can stand it for as much as they play it. But this great sort of, how would you describe this? Like a kind of like disco kind of dancey jam, this super snooper. I saw, that's what they're saying. Super snooper. I thought it was super trooper the whole time.
Disco, yeah. Man. It's, I think if you're going to do the genre talk, it's more Italo disco, which is a thing. The two gentlemen who are responsible for that song, I looked up their names, Carmelo and Michelangelo La Bionda. La Bionda is Italian for the blonde. So Carmen and Mike the blonde gave us this disco track. I urge you guys and any listener to look up La Bionda, because they did a lot of music in the 70s and 80s under the band name La Bionda. Cool. And it's all Italo disco. Good. They even did a record that dropped like in 2007 or something. It was like their last record they did together. One of the brothers has passed on. But the mileage that you get out of the theme song is tremendous, especially like the first half of the film. Finally, like they stop relying on it so much as the movie goes on.
Yeah, I think they take a break in the middle, but it starts to come back at the end. And they're just like, you know what? Does. We need more music. Let's get this back in here. But I do love that they
get creative. Like they'll like the song goes away and then it comes back and they just like find a new place to edit the song in. And it,
I like when they put just the girl singing super snooper, like after something crazy Dave does, or.
Yeah. I think the first time they did that was at the racetrack.
Oh yeah.
Now, do you think in a scene like that, sometimes I wasn't sure if he was using his powers to influence events or predict events.
Yeah, that scene was hard to tell what he was doing.
Yeah,
if he was,
and I feel like when they were editing the movie, they were like, "We need something to kind of put a period on this that says he was using powers." Yeah. So, what about the theme song?
It's definitely see that. That's what a lot of this movie seems like. It I don't know how, you know, I don't know if they had a script or what, but there's a feeling of some parts of this movie being kind of made to fit together after they shot it, like the whole thing with the gambling addicted guy Silvius, like the whole, like I don't know, the whole thing of him, of Dave knowing him, having knowing about his powers for no reason, like, oh, I gotta find Silvius, this random guy who trains dogs and is a ventriloquist, to figure out why my powers disappear out of nowhere. That, I don't know. I could see that being something like, oh, we gotta make this, all this footage work somehow. Or
yeah, you can tell that it's a little, you know, I think they got as far as like, well, he was there both times he jumped out a window.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe gave it some thought.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. He saw me jump out of a window twice. Once successfully, one not so. But oh, Toby brought up, I mean, we gotta pay tribute to Ernest Borgnine. He's, every time I see him in a movie, I'm always reminded he's way up there for me. He's one of my favorite actors. Going way back to Marty, which I feel like, if you guys never seen Marty, I feel like he added a few boys into his lines in this movie. Because in Marty, he says boy all the time. And he says it to Dave. He's like, oh, you're really getting on my nerves, boy. And that's just I feel like that's a Borgnine thing that he would just throw in there. He's a lovable sergeant who's like lovesick for an aging movie star that he helped out of a plane once or something, or off a horse out of a carriage. And he play like, when Dave gets his powers, he's like the audience. He's like, he doesn't believe it, and he just wants Dave to act normal. And he's just like sick of this kid driving him crazy with his supposed powers he has.
There's nothing better than Ernest Borgnine's face. And I did see Marty. I watched it years ago. And I think I discovered it because I was just like looking up movies that had won Best Picture in the past. Mm. And I was like, oh, and Ernest Borgnine won Best Actor in 1955 for Marty.
Yeah.
I was kind of looking at like some YouTube clips from Marty, and And what I did remember, it's been a long time since I saw it, but it's just what I remembered about Super Fuzz is when he starts thinking and talking about Rosie LaBouche, how his face lights up, he gets that giant smile, and that gap tooth is just a mile. The whole smile is a mile wide.
Yeah.
And just the his face just echoing love and smittenness for this woman, Rosie, and how also Marty's kind of a love story. Where I believe he kind of falls in love and just gets too just so deep in love and affection for a woman on screen. So that felt right.
Yeah, you can see that, like when they get to the club where Rosie LaBouche is performing in Borgnine, it just looks, it's almost like he's floating towards her. He's just, his face just like glows and he just can't take his eyes
what
off
do you
her.
Expect if a man gets caught in the middle of an atomic blast, the least he can do is drop dead.
Yeah, what's he going to do with all those fluffed egg whites, guys? Dave Speed in his apartment, fluffing eggs.
I didn't realize that's what it was. I was like, why is he making whipped cream? Like, what is he?
Maybe a meringue or something, I think. I don't know. Yeah, I think you see him with the eggs, and there's that John Wayne poster gag.
This is the first time I saw it in HD, and a lot more of the gags came through better. You know, especially
I bet.
The one at the end with the her hair being dyed red.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was barely readable in this version, and it was a nice transfer, but you know, on a 13-inch TV in the quality that we were seeing stuff in the 80s, it was you had to infer a lot.
Toby brought up I was texting with Toby about the decorations in Dave Speed's apartment and how it was like a teenage or like a kid's room, because he had all these like Star Wars posters and Flintstones
and the Superman comic. I mean, the vibe of the whole movie was very much like a cartoon, you know? I mean, there's Wile E. Coyote moments and there's, you know, it's just full of sort of cartoon childlike, what's the word I'm looking for? Like
whimsy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the movie, I was sold on the movie when he, in the very beginning, his origin story where he's out in like the swamplands trying to service a ticket. But there's a rocket launch going on that's carrying red plutonium, whatever that is. It's very dangerous, and Dave Speed shouldn't be out there. And Sarge has all been out of shape because he sent him out there, but he didn't know. And I love when he goes back, when Dave goes back to get in his rowboat, but there's a gator in it. He pulls out his gun. He's like, well, this gator won't move. Should I shoot the gator? But his heart's too good.
Yeah.
So he's like, okay, I'll just do a warning shot. I'll shoot straight in the He shoots the rocket, which again, I don't even know if they planned that, but it's perfect. I love it. I love just him shooting and they cut to that rocket exploding in the sky. And the worst happens. He gets stuck in a red plutonium storm or plutonic storm or whatever they call it.
It's funny. You said red plutonic or plutonic?
I heard them say plutonic one point.
Okay. I was wondering because...
Or maybe it's plutonic, he says. No, plutonic. I'm saying platonic like an idiot, but it's plutonic.
Okay. Not necessarily an idiot, though, because when I heard you say that, I remember hearing them refer to the red Amiga rays that he was...
Oh, really?
...saturated with. Yeah.
They don't make a big deal of the fact that this movie is shot and set in Miami in the film. But watching it, you know, as someone in their 40s, like I'm just taking, what city is this in? You know, like you really want to know. And they did shoot it around Miami. And so maybe Amiga race is a thing. There's a lot of people speaking Spanish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I had that Florida feeling from the outset just because of like the swamp and stuff. But it really clenched it when I saw like an I-95 sign on the highway. And I was like, OK, that makes sense. But yeah, I love how it's like super ambiguous about where it, like I love how all the police cars just say city police on them with no like distinct placement of where they are. It makes
you remember the yellow truck that he moves with his mind. He like parks the truck.
Yeah. So that shot, is that some sort of miniature or what's going on there?
No, that was a legit truck.
How'd they make it go sideways?
Oh yeah, the moving truck, yeah, was a miniature. But it was also, they, you know, oh, by the way, a yellow truck with two blue stripes is a Penske.
Oh, okay.
In case you were wondering. And they just covered up the Penske logo with like some made up logo, and then it just said Laundry Collection Company. Yeah. It's like, I did important research, in case you were wondering.
Again, these... that's part of like what I love, though. Again, all the way the effects were done with this, it's, you know, you don't get it now, but this movie really feels handmade.
Almost made up
as they went, you know, like they had, we kind of know what the story will be. But yeah, being able to see, you know, the strings that are moving stuff, making stuff float, or like, you know, shooting Speed at a low angle when he's on top of the airplane so that they can shoot it on the ground and not actually have him up there. And you know.
Oh yeah. I saw the string on the coffee cup when he gets his coffee cup. Yeah. I love
it. A lot of those helicopter shots too. It's just, you know, they just needed a helicopter on the ground and blue sky in the background. So it looked like, and handheld it. So it looks like he's flying. Yeah,
that was the most unbelievable thing in the movie was not any of Dave's like crazy abilities. It was Ernest Borgnine like spelunking down a helicopter onto a ship.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes you wonder, like, do they bother calling him a stuntman 5 or 6 times in the movie just to sell that part of it?
Yeah. Yeah, I love that fake refrigerator with the fake frozen fish he gets locked in. That was great. Like, you don't see any like cold breath or anything. It's just got the guys in there to paint it. Mm-hmm. Paint it up.
Yep.
Make it look cold. Love it.
They did a good makeup job.
Yeah.
Making him look frosty.
Yeah.
That was an image I remembered vividly from watching this as a child. His face looking through that little hole.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
He's like kind of smiling, but kind of dead. He's supposed to be frozen.
I know.
What did you say?
He said it were three jerks, paradise.
Yeah.
I love, okay, my besides Borgnine, my favorite weird thing about this movie are the three goons and their names. The names that they gave these guys, Paradise Alley. I looked him up because I couldn't believe my ears. Like, I mean, they say Paradise a bunch enough that you're like, okay, that guy's name is Paradise.
Right.
But the other guys are Tragedy Row and Slot Machine.
My goodness.
Slot Machine kills me. I love it.
Amazing.
Let's just name them after like places that gangsters hang out. I don't know. I love it.
Paradise, Slot Machine, and what was the other one? Which was the one that had that
Tragedy Row,
that goofy goon voice? He was like, "Hey, boss."
I think that was Slot Machine.
That was Slot Machine.
I think so. I loved him. Can anyone? Oh, there's one gag that I don't know if it's a gag. Like, it's funny. I don't. But it felt like there was supposed to be a payoff, and maybe I didn't get it when he's on death row, waiting to be executed for the fourth time. He's finishing up his 14th plate of beans. Like, that's and it's funny, but I kept thinking like, oh, there's going to be some like payoff to him eating all these, like the fart jokes come in, or he used all the gas in him to blow up the balloon. Maybe like that's the only connection I could try and make, but they don't really, I don't know. I guess they just thought it would be funny for him to eat a lot of beans as his last meal. I don't know.
Yeah, the closest thing that comes to a payoff of that is when the priest comes.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Well, I can't imagine you've done any sinning since yesterday, so I'm not going to bother absolving you of anything." And he's like, "What about gluttony?"
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's right. that's my favorite, that also has my favorite line. There's the other prisoner across the way, the black guy, and he says, "You're going to be eating lunch with number one honky."
Yeah.
I'm like, that's the best word for God I've ever heard.
The number one
honky. Yeah, it's a kid's movie through and through. I noticed Dave, like, after he shoots the rocket, that's the last time he uses his gun. He never shoots it again, which is kind of a cool thing. Like, he's just like, well, I got these powers. I don't need this gun.
Right. Or when he does use his gun, it's to catch bullets.
Yeah, oh, yeah, he uses it as a reverse gun.
Yeah.
That's a great gag. I mean, I've seen that in a lot of movies, the catching of a bullet in the teeth that he does, but I bet that was amazing to see as a kid. It's like, what?
Yeah, for sure. But it was also, again, you know, it wasn't so technical that you couldn't deconstruct it as a kid and figure out, you know, how the gag was pulled off.
The second time I somehow missed how Sarge hates gum the first time I watched it. And so it made a lot more sense. That's another joke they could have hammered on, when they're floating on the big balloon, like they could have had a line where he says it's bubble gum and Sarge blows his top again. That would have been funny.
I really enjoyed watching Tony Torpedo played by Mark Lawrence.
Yeah.
And his over the top. I looked into Mark Lawrence. He's from the Bronx, I think. And he just really dialed in the kind of gangster leader voice. And his accent was just super over the top, very comical, kind of rendition of a wise guy voice. He was a lot of fun to listen to.
Oh yeah, yeah, he was great. I love when he says he has a nervous stomach, and then he hits his plate of spaghetti, and the spaghetti lands on the three dopes' faces. So good.
You figure an Italian director takes Italian food very seriously, and it almost seemed like, let's make this plate of spaghetti look like the grossest spaghetti you could ever have.
It is like
the noodles were like thick udon noodles, so you know they'd look good on film, and then the sauce was, you know, like ketchup water.
Yeah, it was almost orange.
And then he flips the plate and it lands on the three goons, and Paradise just starts eating the noodle right away.
Yeah. I'm not sure where this came from, whether it came from the director or if it was in the screenplay or what, but I noticed there a through line with the treatment of animals through this, starting with the gator and deciding not to shoot the gator.
Yeah.
When he's in Sylvius's apartment, freeing all the dogs.
That's right.
At the end,
yeah.
You know.
And he puts the gangsters in the dog cages too.
Yeah. And grabs a handful of treats for the one dog. And, you know, it's like a week's worth. And he just throws it in a cage with him.
Gave that dog a pile of treats. Do you remember the elephants in the beginning?
Oh, yeah. Elephants. Yeah, yeah. The greyhounds at the racetrack. Yeah.
I thought they did a good job of hiding what his Achilles heel was, seeing red.
I didn't get it. I didn't get it till he told me that.
Right.
He loses
okay.
powers.
Well, yeah, then they did
red.
A good job of it.
But I agree.
By the time the elephants show up, he's like, he knows he has powers, but he doesn't know when the powers go away. And he sees a red light, and he wants to demonstrate to Sarge that he's got these powers. And he can't at the moment because there's a red light and he doesn't know why.
Yeah. Fucking Sarge is yelling at him about chewing gum in his car.
I like how this movie has the equivalent of the time travel paradox. This one's where he can see into a truck. And you can see that there's counterfeit bills hidden in there. But when they open it, the interior is all red. So
red everywhere.
Everywhere. And, you know, it presents a question.
Yeah. he kept saying, when I saw it from the side, it's like, yeah, but
yeah.
It was like someone splattered red paint on everything in there.
That scene where him and Evelyn are sitting at the football game. And he makes the crowd disappear so they could be alone.
Oh, yeah.
The grandstands are orange, but it's a very reddish orange.
Oh,
but
my
that
God.
Has no effect.
I didn't even notice that. Yeah, the movie's so gag-based that, when you're using your regular movie mind, scenes like that, when the stadium empties out, except for that one guy that apparently the police department's been trying to find for months. And Dave follows him and chases him down. There's this cool little foot chasing. And you're like, oh, this guy's important. Maybe I just missed it. I didn't realize how important this guy is. This is going to be the next key to the next part of the plot. But it's just, No, this is just for this one gag we had. We just needed him to be an anomaly when the stadium empties out. Which, again, doesn't make sense that that guy is still there when everyone disappears.
No, and that's sort of the thing that gives me that feeling of, you know, making things up, even like defining the rules of his powers, making them up as they go. Because like, okay, did the guy not disappear because he was the only person in the stadium wearing red?
Yeah.
I got to call out Terrence's tackle of that man when he chased him out into the parking lot.
Yeah.
That was like an expert, like, law enforcement football tackle, yeah, the way he took that guy down. That was impressive.
Yeah, like tackled him at the back of the thighs. That was like, ouch.
Yeah, there's a couple things in the movie that are like real, you know, like when he slams Paradise's neck in the car door.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, he's just holding it on.
Yeah, and then Paradise gets in the car and then Speed slams his fingers. Yeah. He closes the door on his fingers. And they're just they're just stuck in there.
The door frame, like, you know, bending. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, it looked painful.
I love the image. I don't know what the choice of this was, the full body when Dave jumps out the window, but he lands on a red car, so every bone in his body gets shattered. And then he's in the full body cast, and for some reason they have a Band-Aid. Like, in my head, like, the nose part of the full body cast broke when they were, like, getting it on the actor. So they're like, oh no, this looks stupid. So they just put a Band-Aid over it.
That's funny. I bet you're right. I bet you're totally right.
Because I think you could see there's like a chunk missing there. And it's just like, but it looks good. It's a hilarious thing to like use a Band-Aid on a full body cast. And the red thing, I mean, the biggest, like Toby, you said the stadium seats are red, but when he's on top of that airplane at the end of the movie, that plane has red stripes all over it.
Oh,
and he's like,
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, he's using his powers to move the plane.
That's the plane they got, man.
I know. That's the thing. Like, what are they gonna do? They probably showed up on set, and whoever supplied the plane shows up, and they're like, God damn it!
I mean, you can cover up a logo on a Penske truck, but I don't think you can attach cardboard to a plane. There's rules. I want to know if you guys noticed. What's that scene when? Dave needs to go to Sylvius's house. He's looking for Sylvius at his house. He's not there. And a fight breaks out with the goons.
Yeah.
That whole scene had really kind of loud Foley work. Like every footstep walking across the room was just really loud. I mean, you could tell it was Foley work, but in some way it felt like they were really just trying to, I don't know, maybe play into gags in a way. Like, all the sound effects in that one scene were just very heavy.
Yeah, they were probably, just trying to accentuate everything. And this is, I mean, Zach, this is, they probably didn't, do you think they didn't shoot with audio on set probably?
I mean, they may have for reference, but yeah, I mean, the whole movie seemed overdubbed top to bottom. But yeah, who knows? I mean, and why that scene in particular had more accentuated sound effects. I mean, you know, they could have just hired a guy for the day to fill in and that was the scene.
Maybe it was like, really enthusiastic. It was like his first time doing that job. He's like, I'm going to murder this one. This is going to be great.
Yeah.
The last part of that fight scene, I forget what happens, but they end up running around a corner and you don't see the fight, but you see furniture coming through a doorway. Like you'd see in an old cartoon, like, very comical. It had me laughing.
Yeah. I really love that because you're looking at a doorway and all the stuff comes flying out. And then, you know, just telling a story through camera work, you pan right to another doorway and stuff's flying out that way. And a bunch of dogs come running out, you know, and it's just so like. Good.
I love the scene before the Sylvius's apart, when he's at the carnival looking for Sylvius. And I love this guy who's running the freak show. He's like this big dude with that like towel wrapped around his head to make him like he has like a Middle Eastern voice when you first see him. And then he drops the accent when Dave starts questioning him. I love the look of this carny guy. He's like, he just looked incredible. Like he looked real, like he looked like they went to a carnival and this was the guy lurking there. And they're like, can you be in this movie real quick? Cause you look incredible.
There's never been a more handsome way to eat popcorn out of a box than in that scene.
I love that popcorn box.
With Dave
box.
Walking around with his little popcorn box.
Yeah, that's the thing. Dave is very handsome. He looks... I looked him up. He was like a comedic actor. He usually worked with a partner. But he looks so much like the original Django. What's that? I forget that guy's name.
Franco.
Yeah, Franco Nero. Yeah. Mm. He looks so much Nero, like Franco Nero. I thought it was him when the movie started, but he's got that very similar, like Italian, but yeah, he's got blue eyes.
He did do a spaghetti western of his own called My Name Is Nobody, which I saw, you know, a long time ago when I was in high school. But.
Oh, cool. Yeah, Carpucci is, I've only seen a couple of his movies, but every time I watch them, I find them. I think he's one of my favorites as far as like Italian directors go in this sort of vein. And he's got tons, and I really should watch more. We did one on the show, Compañeros, that he directed, which is, God, one of my favorite Westerns I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think, you know, after revisiting this, you know, checking out more of his movies is definitely on my on my agenda now.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to hear that music again. They rely on the disco theme song a whole lot. But during the whole boat scene, there's this music playing in the background. I don't know if you guys took notice of it. And it's just very weird. It's like weird kind of droney synthesizer music that was like...
Oh, no, I didn't
notice. It was checking a box for me. And
yeah, me too. I was like, I immediately started to look to see if there was any way to get the soundtrack, but I couldn't come up with anything. I mean, it was hard enough to get the movie on disc. And import it from Germany.
Oh yeah, thanks for Zach hooked us up with a really great quality this movie. It looked incredible. I'm sure it was a trip for you. I mean, you've talked about it before, like
I've been revisiting a lot of movies that I liked that, you know, I was never able to watch beyond like Laserdisc resolution. Like I just popped in A Better Tomorrow by John Woo because there's a 4K transfer out there now, and at the beginning. When he sits up, his back is covered in sweat and it's soaked through a white shirt. And that's about all I could tell. But now in 4K, I realize I can see all of his, Yakuza tattooing on his back that you couldn't see before.
Holy crap. That's amazing. Speaking of John Woo, did you see, John Woo's got a new movie coming out, an American movie that's, it's mostly silent.
Did I read right? Which makes me think of that Luc Besson movie, the final combat.
I haven't seen that.
Le Dernier Combat. I haven't seen that either, but not too many people go down that alley, but you know, if anybody can do it, it's John.
I saw some quotes from him saying how the budget's small, so he had to like work in a different way that he's used to. I was like, oh, that might be kind of cool, you know, push him back a few decades.
Yeah, for sure.
Into old working meds, maybe.
Pull the optical printer out of the closet.
Evelyn's great. So he's got, we barely even talked about his girlfriend. He's got a love interest who happens to be Sarge's niece who works at the laundromat, and she's kind of the only like voice of reason, but it's a little uncomfortable scene when she's like sick of his powers and she's like, you gotta chill out with this stuff. And then he uses his powers on her to stop her. And then like,
That was
she's like frozen. He's like, I'm going to marry you. And it's like,
not kiss her in this state. And then he does.
I can't remember the name of the actress, but she was complaining about getting a lot of roles where she would play the wife whose purpose in the story was just to say to her husband, no, do not go do that brave thing. You know, and it felt very much like that. And that even kind of, you know, put a sour taste on the wedding scene where she's dyed her hair red so he can't use his powers anymore.
Hey, by the way, you can watch Super Fuzz on Tubi. I just found it, but they use the European title. It's Super Snooper.
Oh my God. Tube. Super Snoop. Wow. He's a super snooper. You know what? This was good for the soul, guys. You know, getting to talk to my brothers about a movie from their youths made me feel good.
You got to catch me, baby.
You got to catch me.
Yeah. Yeah, Charlie, I want to thank you for, you know, asking us to be on and to take a look at a movie that I haven't seen in decades. And then also, you know, I'm happy to be here in place of Dale, but I got to say, like, listening to you two, your podcast, like, whenever I've got a long drive or I'm going to work or I can't sleep, it's awesome. You guys have a wonderful chemistry that, you know, it's just, what am I trying to say? I love your show. I love what you're doing.
That means a lot. That means a lot. Guys, if you have siblings and especially older ones that compliment you, feels really good. Feels really good. So thank you. Thank you,
Zach. I totally echo what Zach said. I listen to, I don't listen to every episode, but I listen to most of them. And it's a lot of fun to come home to Dale and Chuck every week.
And Dale will be back soon. I guess 2 more weeks while you're listening to this.
It's not a tumor.
And we got, next week we have I guess I can reveal this. Dale put together a little clip show of, I think, outtakes, stuff that he's been cutting, but that, you know, there's gold in those outtakes. So he put together a little clip show before he got on his boat. And you'll hear that next week. And then after that, we will be back regular in October. And it's October, so it's going to be spooky month. So we're going to... Hey, guys, this is Chuck piping in here after the fact. As I edit this, I forgot that there's another week in September. We'll be putting up one of the Ko-fi ups onto the regular feed that week. And then Dale will be back, and we will commence our love affair. Bye. Hopefully pick some good movies to watch with everyone. Do you guys have anything you want to plug? You want to plug anything?
Away, Zach.
Everybody come to Glendale, California. Ooh. Next week, because there's a movie that I was a cinematographer on playing.
Whoa,
in a film festival.
Hello.
Hey.
I'll see everybody there.
Whoa, what's the name? Can we say the name of the movie?
Yeah, sure. The name of the movie is Fluorescent Beast. It stars my buddy John T. Woods, and directed by another buddy of mine named Paul Osborne.
Awesome. I know John. He's a charismatic man, that John Woods.
He is. He can probably slide tackle with the best of them, too.
That's fantastic. Well, I probably can't make it to Glendale, but I know I have a couple people out there. Maybe they'll make it down. What about you, Tobe?
It's a little embarrassing, but I used to play in bands, and I wrote a song in the 90s called Superhuman. And as I was watching Super Fuzz, it it reminded me how much I stole from
disco song. I was just thinking about that song the other day. I didn't put it together. Oh, that's not embarrassing. I mean, that's people do that all the time. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. If you have access to that, we could put that. We could tag that at the end of the episode if you're.
Oh man!
But I understand if you don't want to.
I might have something somewhere. But on the real, I am working on an album of original instrumental music that hopefully I'll get done.
Yes.
In the next couple months.
Awesome. Will that be released under the name Yeebot?
Yes, it will.
Yeah, look out for that, guys. And oh god, Dale has this stuff memorized. I don't have it memorized. Go to batandspider.com. For all that stuff, and email us whatever our email address is. I don't know what it is.
They can email. They can call and leave voicemails. They can.
Yeah.
They can pop on the Discord.
Yeah, get on that Discord. Get on there soon, because we'll probably announce the first October episode in there, since we won't be recording next week.
I'm gonna get on there now and post something annoying.
Love everybody. Love you guys. Thanks for being on the show. It was a great pleasure of mine, and hopefully we can do this again. Sometime soon.
Okay. Love you back, buddy.
Love you back. Love Dale as well. Hi, Dale.
Hi, Dale.
Bye, Dale.
You got it?